This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, where we stir up vibrant stories, rich traditions, and the voices of the Ukrainian community. Grab a seat, it's time to dive into something truly special. Hello, my dear listeners. Today I've prepared a little surprise for you. Last week, the ambassador of Ukraine to New Zealand, Vasyl Moroshnichenko, visited Dunedin with an important mission: to officially appoint Olena Grab as honorary consul and to recognize our local Dunedin community united in support of Ukraine for everything we are doing to support Ukraine's victory. This marks the ambassador's second visit to Dunedin, which is a significant and meaningful moment for our community. I won't take much of your time today. I recorded the atmosphere of this gathering at Dunedin Club, so you can truly feel what it was like to be there, along with the ambassador's powerful and precise speech. Stay with us.
Yeah, we're just about to start the formal part of the evening here with the investiture. I hope you really enjoyed your meal. I have learnt one thing that I'd like to impart today. I'd just like to, if you would all raise your glasses to Ukraine, please. Budmol.
Budmol.
This is cheers in Ukrainian. And yeah, it gives me great delight to welcome the ambassador, Vasyl Moroshnichenko.
President, thank you very much for a very kind introduction, and I'm so pleased to see such a great turnout at Dunedin Club tonight. It's a very special occasion. My second time in your beautiful city, probably my 12th or 13th time in New Zealand. As you know, I cover New Zealand from Canberra, but it's always a great and immense pleasure to be able to come to New Zealand. I try to visit quite often, and today we flew in the morning from Wellington, and what a beautiful weather you have arranged for us. Thank you. Tonight here we are for a special occasion, and that occasion is that Ukraine is expanding its presence in New Zealand, and for that purpose we are very pleased that Ukraine's foreign minister has decided to appoint Olena Grab as an honorary consul for South Island. And there is a story between two of us that I would like to share, because we have known each other for the past 24 years. We were young students in Ukraine when we applied and went to Canada for 3 months, where we spent jointly working in the offices of the members of parliament, of the Canadian parliament in Ottawa. And that was probably one of the best university programs we could have done in those days. And I always vividly recall that time that we spent in Canada learning about democracy, learning about how parliaments work. And I have to tell you that since I came to Australia 4 years ago, and I think that's the Westminster system that both New Zealand and Australia enjoy, that I could reflect back on my experience in Canada, the way the government functioned, the way the government was and parliament was organized, and also in a way the system that actually works. And it was a great pleasure for me to start my engagements with members of parliament, both in New Zealand and in Australia. But Olena had a spectacular career in law. She was practicing law for 15 years. She was working for many international clients on cross-border transactions and corporate investment, property. And after that, after a certain period of time, she decided to move on and move into a new field, into a new sector. And she specifically went to get another degree. So I think Olena has 3 degrees at least, or maybe four, 3 degrees, 2 of them from London. But her second degree was in art management. And she really became a professional in the sector. She then later on started her own publishing house, and she's been focusing on art books. But also she's done some phenomenal cultural diplomacy projects. And one of those projects I would like to highlight, because I think is quite phenomenal. Olena spent over 5 years living with her husband, Jared, grew up in Istanbul. And at that time, as you know, Ukraine and Turkey are neighbors through the Black Sea. But at the same time, what was lacking between our two countries is that cultural understanding that required an extra effort. And Olena pioneered, actually, and initiated the translation of one of the most famous Ukrainian writers, Lesya Ukrainka, and her famous poem called Lisova Pisnya, which is a forest song, which was translated into beautifully translated into a Turkish language. And then she launched the book, and she became a celebrity in Ukraine. The reason it happened, because it was in my circles and those people who follow different cultural events, it was so new, it was so different. You know, usually we try to translate our authors into English, which we still continue doing so, but doing something specifically for Turkey, as now Turkey is being called, was quite extraordinary. And it also happened that our current foreign minister, he also served as an ambassador to Turkey in those days, so it also helped. So Olena worked very closely with the Ukrainian embassy in Ankara on different cultural diplomacy projects. But today, certainly, since he's come back with her husband, who's local and had a successful career working for big international law firms internationally, will be now based here in Dunedin. And her job as an honorary consul is still an honorary job, as you know. It's still a volunteer job, but it is a great honor for Ukraine to be able to have somebody here locally who will be your connection to Ukraine, who will be your connection to the Ukrainian government, to the Ukrainian people. And she will focus on fostering those connections in business, in culture, in education, and in different other sectors. So I kindly ask you to support Olena, to help her do her job. And if you may need anything on Ukraine, please feel free to reach. She will be also traveling quite a lot in South Island and to Christchurch, to Nelson, and other cities here in the region. And I'm very thankful to the Ukrainian community who supported her. And I'm very pleased that we'll be able to commence this work. So on this note, I would like to invite Olena, and I'll give her the consular pendant, which was signed by Ukraine's foreign minister, Andriy Sybiha. And I would like Olena to give a speech. Thank you.
Thank you very much, first of all, Excellency and a friend. It is a great pleasure to have a long-term friend of mine being in such a high position in Ukrainian government, which gives me puts a lot of faith in our future, because now we have a very a different generation of politicians, a different generation of government officials, and I'm very proud to be part of them. It's a very different country than it used to be, and has a very bright future, especially because I am also lecturing at the Ukrainian University. I continue to do that, a Ukrainian Catholic University in Lviv. For 5 years, I teach, and during the war, even during the full-scale Russian invasion in 2022, started, we have not missed once. And my publishing house is still operating in Ukraine. It has not been closed. We have not missed on anything. We managed to work during the blackouts, frozen houses, all sorts. And I remember that one of my designers on the forest on was, because we had this, you know, Russians were attacking the infrastructure, and she was saying, I can't work today because I need to start the generator and I need to cook some food. And I said, okay, we'll have to wait till that's finished. And then in the evening, she would write me an email. No, I can't. I cannot not work on it. And she was working like literally with the candlelight, editing the book. And it was such a. Actually, people are very much united. I mean, it's tragical, but I think our society truly became better through that challenge. And so I thank you very much, Your Excellency, for such an order, and the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Ukraine for this trusted, you know, to trust me with such a thing. And I'm very much looking forward to to, you know, having conversations with all of you, working together. I have only been in New Zealand for a year, but I'm looking forward to learning more and contributing more of what I have. I, you know, have a lot of cultural and legal background, so I'm sure we're going to see each other again many times on different encounters. And if you have any questions or anything, or you know, anything to do with Ukraine, please feel free to ring me up and we can go for coffee. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Olena, and also very pleased that Patrick Gamble, our Honorary Consul in Auckland, will continue performing his functions as an Honorary Consul for North Island. He resumed his Honorary Consulship job in 2023, and thank you, Patrick, for your hard work and for your contribution to Ukraine's cause. And also now I would like to recognize a leader of the Ukrainian community in Dunedin, for her hard work, Olga Vyazenko. I would like you to come here to stage. I have a little certificate that I would like to present to you from the embassy for your hard work of promoting Ukraine, talking about Ukraine, and being a voice for Ukraine, together with all the members of the Ukrainian community coming to rallies, organizing interviews, and also sharing a Ukrainian story. Thank you, Olga, for your hard work.
Can I have a...
Sure, of course.
I didn't prepare my speech, but I want to say that this recognition, not of me, but of all the Ukrainian community in Dunedin and all the supporters who comes every Saturday to the Octagon for more than 4 years, and we never missed one Saturday to protest against Russian war against Ukraine. All of that people support Ukraine and do everything for Ukraine to win. Yeah, so I want to say that this is for the community, it's not for me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
And now I'd like to share with you a powerful address by Vasyl Marozhnichenko. These words are not just formal remarks. They reflect the reality Ukraine is living through and the role each of us plays in supporting it. Let's listen.
Not insights, but just some of the stories from Ukraine. As we are seeing the force here, the large-scale invasion by Russia, and the way we are affected by it, the way the world is affected by it, what's in it for New Zealand, why it matters, and why it's important for Ukraine to prevail, and why we have a vested interest in ensuring that Russia fails in Ukraine. But like before I go there, I would like just to share with you some of the general reflections based on the length of this war, because you have to remember that Russians invaded Ukraine in 2014. So it's 12 years now. And I recently spoke at a big rally in Sydney, and I thought about it. And what came to my mind was that I realized that we already had kids who went to school in 2014, and they have already graduated from school, and all they have seen is war. They've had their friends or parents of their friends or relatives who suffered, who got killed, who got wounded. We now don't have a single family in Ukraine which doesn't have somebody in their close network, in their close circle, who wasn't affected by war. And I was still there in Kyiv when it all started. It was in February 2022, waking up 5 o'clock in the morning with your family. My son was 5, my daughter was 18, and realizing that Russian troops are actually landing in Kyiv. I don't know Dunedin very well, but imagine you live somewhere here, and any other spot in about a 25-minute drive from here would be the spot where the enemy was landing. So imagine waking up in the morning with your kids at home. What would you do? And this is what millions of Ukrainians woke up on that morning, trying to do something, right? Leave the city, escape the war. We certainly have brought over 5 million people to Europe. Some came to Australia, some came to New Zealand. And now we get into the fifth year and we don't see an end to it. And the thing is that you need to think about why Russia has invaded Ukraine. And it's very important to keep this in mind, why Russia did so, because sometimes people are confused of why Russia has done so. But I'll just give you one very simple line about it. Russia invaded Ukraine because Russia was emboldened by the reaction to their initial invasion of 2014. That's one thing. Secondly, Russia is pursuing its neo-imperialistic conquest of reviving the empire, which Russians cannot imagine without Ukraine. Russians do not recognize Ukrainians as a separate nation. They don't recognize us as a separate country, as a separate culture. They all think that we are just Russians who got lost, totally denying any agency whatsoever. It was pretty clear if you read that long essay that Vladimir Putin has published in 2021, where he clearly stated Ukraine is a fake country, it was invented by Lenin, and therefore it has no right to exist, and we're going to destroy it. Certainly, it was the courage and the resilience of the Ukrainian people who fought back. It was a support from many different countries which came and helped Ukraine, including that support from New Zealand, for which we are extremely grateful. As you know, support for Ukraine here is bipartisan. All parties support Ukraine, and that was from the very beginning and has been consistent. And I try to come to Wellington to see you politicians quite often, and I always express the gratitude for that support. Was it the Labour government at the beginning? Was it the coalition of conservative parties later on? But they all have made an effort, including with the visit of Defense Minister Pini Hinari to Ukraine in November 22, and of course with the visit of Minister Dudis Collins more recently in September last year. But why this war matters to New Zealand? Russia is a permanent member of the UN Security Council. Russia is a country which has nuclear weapons. In 1994, Ukraine probably has made the biggest contribution to international peace and nuclear non-proliferation by giving up its nuclear weapons. In those days, Ukraine probably had the third largest stockpile of those weapons. And we did so because we were pressured by our Western partners to give up the weapons. And we transferred all those weapons to Russia. We destroyed and dismantled our strategic bombers, and we received assurances that Russia will never invade us. And they did. Russia has blatantly ignored all those obligations. It has ignored any norms of international law, and Russia just started the war. Russia has now occupied 20% of Ukrainian territory. They are not demonstrating any signs of ending this war. For Putin, which is also you have to keep in mind, Ukraine was an existential threat. But the threat which was coming from Ukraine was not coming from the fact that we would ever invade Russia, but the threat was that we were a democracy next door. A country with a very strong civil society, with free media, the country that has demonstrated that we can elect different leaders in that 20-year period of time when we didn't like our leaders, we got rid of them. So for Putin to have Ukraine next door, for his own people to see that there is actually a democracy here next door, to see that Ukrainian people as of 2017 could travel to Europe without a visa, was a huge blow. He saw it as a threat. He's been running Russia for 26 years, and he doesn't show any sign of stopping doing so. Now, by starting the war, he's been able to consolidate his power. He's been able to get rid of his opposition. And he now cannot stop this war because, as you know, for any dictator, the biggest threat is to be perceived as weak. And of course, we in Ukraine are convinced he's going to crumble. His demise is inevitable. It's just a matter of time when it's going to happen. I have to remind you when Ceausescu, a dictator of Romania, his popularity in the 80s was around 99%. But I think it was 2 weeks later that he was captured and executed by his own people. So those dictators are strong until they are no more. And I think that's the fate of Vladimir Putin, and that's what's going to happen to him. But now, why this matters to New Zealand? Firstly, Russia is a Pacific country. Russia maintains a large Pacific fleet in Vladivostok with all the strategic bombers, submarines, all the military vessels. Russia is asserting its posture and influence in Southeast Asia by conducting joint military exercises with Indonesia, by cooperating heavily with countries of Indochina, and actively promoting their interests here. Russia has opened up and created a precedent for any other country which has nuclear weapons, which is strong enough to be able to follow the same route, to be able to follow the same blueprint, and always can reference Ukraine as an example. Because if Russians can do it, probably other authoritarian countries can do so. And certainly in this world where there are no rules, What is the protection the small nations get? There is no protection. In the world of a jungle, small nations have no chance of survival. As we continue fighting, we are still asking you for your support. But even during the past 4 years, we have seen some rapid developments in defense industry and defense technology in Ukraine that are now is extremely useful to many other countries. That includes electronic warfare, cutting-edge technology in maritime, aerial, and robotic systems that are being deployed in Ukraine. And this knowledge, this experience will be of huge value to the New Zealand Defense Forces, to anybody out there who may face a new modern warfare. Because as we are thankful for your soldiers, which are providing basic infantry training to our soldiers in the UK, the new modern warfare is different. And we now have clearly seen how destructive the Iranian Shahed drones can be. But Russians have been catching up very quickly. I remember in 2024, when they would send about 30 drones and maybe about 7 missiles at Ukraine, we would call it a massive attack. But 12 months later, Russians were able to send 500 drones and 25 missiles at the same time. Probably in several months, they'll be able to launch an attack which would include 1,000 of those drones. Each Shahed drone, which is an Iranian drone, and Russia is now called Garand, which is a more improved version of the Iranian drone, can carry 40 kilograms of explosives. Ukrainian people in Kyiv, in Lviv, in Kharkiv, Odessa, and other cities see these drones coming in all the time. And it has been tough. This winter was probably the most difficult winter we've ever had. Russians have weaponized winter. They have deliberately targeted our energy systems, power supply, water distribution, heating. We had the coldest winter in the past 30 years. The temperatures dropped to minus 20. So imagine living in a city like Kyiv, which has about 2.5 million people, and you live in one of those residential buildings with no electricity, no water, no heating. That was probably the coldest and the toughest winters we've had. The goal of that was to really subdue Ukrainians, to intimidate them, to put pressure on the civilians, to make them put pressure on the Ukrainian political leadership to surrender to the Russians. But I have to tell you, Ukrainians have seen it tough, but they understand that we don't have any option. Because the only option we have is to live under the Russian occupation. And we know what it's like under the Russian occupation. We know what happens in those occupied territories. It's not the land that we are fighting for, we are fighting for Ukrainian people. When I got here in 2022 and somebody asked me, well, how long do you think this war is going to last? And I think in 2022, my prediction was, oh, it should be over by 2023. There is no way this war can last longer than that. And now it's been over 4 years. Russians have lost 1.3 million people in this war. This war has already lasted longer than the Soviet Nazi war during the Second World War. It's already longer than that. Ukrainians have carried this transgenerational trauma for a very long period of time, starting from the times of the Great Famine that was organized by the Soviets against the Ukrainians in the 30s, when Ukraine lost over 5 million people to a forced starvation because Ukrainians refused to join collective farms. Then later on during the Second World War, Ukraine lost 12 million people. We lost 12 million people in the Second World War. Out of all Soviet casualties of 26 million, 12 million were Ukrainian, 7 million from Belarus, and the rest were from Russia and other nations. So we all grew up with that trauma of that famine and of the Second World War, and now we'll have another generation growing up with the trauma of this war. If you ask me how you can support Ukraine, I ask you to make a donation. Make a donation to different NGOs which are there supporting Ukrainian civilians. KiwiCare in New Zealand has done a great job of raising money for energy needs in Ukraine. They currently have run a campaign in Worms for Kyiv. You can Google KiwiCare. I think you had Tembi Powell here the other week who spoke to you. Please make a donation, support the work that they are doing. I'm sure you've met many members of the Ukrainian community here who are raising money and sending to different organizations in Ukraine. Please do so. I definitely thank you for your showing up here, for your support to Olena, for the work that Ukraine is doing. I have to tell you that probably New Zealand is as far as it can get from Ukraine. And the need is probably as further than anything, right? And let me tell you, when I came to Kyiv in early September with your minister, and New Zealand is a very exotic country in Ukraine. It's very rare, right? So a lot of people approached me and said, wow, we have a defense minister from New Zealand traveling all the way to Ukraine. It meant a lot because It's that solidarity, that support that Ukrainian people can see. And that's very inspirational. It's very heartening for Ukrainians to see that people in New Zealand care. So thank you for that.
Thank you for tuning in to Borscht Club on ORFM. Stay connected with us and listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and oar.org.nz. This is your host, Оля Вязенко, wishing you joy and a delicious day ahead. До зустрічі! See you next time!
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.